16. Let me go get my arm and one off my desk.
Pencil.
Yes. Thank you, Randy. Genesis 16. I need to make myself a note about this before it leaves my mind. Okay, thank you. All right. Need to get that out of my mind. All right, let's go to Genesis 16. I actually want to ask y'all a question, and I want to get a consensus of where to go after this. So at this point in our study, we are looking at the three intermediary agents in the Old Testament, the Word, the Wisdom, and the Angel of the Lord, and trying to see how they help us in reading the Old Testament with a triune perspective. After this, I can't decide where to go. Either we're going to look at scenes of worship in the heavenly tabernacle and try to see how those are triune, or we're going to look at Genesis 1 and try to read Genesis 1 triune. So do we go to Genesis 1 with creation, or do we look at like Isaiah 6, Revelation 4 and 5? Which one do you want to start with, Randy?
Heavenly first.
Heavenly worship. Thank you. Oh. All right. So,
Genesis 1.
Well,
I would have said Genesis 1.
And y'all let me know which one to go with. My vote's for Jerry. All right. So, we'll do Angel of the Lord. This is going to take us two classes. Ain't no way we're getting through this in one class. No way. This one takes two classes. After that, we'll look at scenes of heavenly worship, and that one's going to be some cool spirit stuff. So that one I'm excited about. And then we'll probably spend like a month talking through Genesis 1. I've finally figured out after much self doubt about how to do this, I have finally discovered how I want to do Genesis 1. You have that anticipation until then about exactly how we're going to read Genesis 1 triune. So let's today deal with the angel of the Lord. I'm going to have us read this whole chapter because the angel of the Lord is really important to this. Eric, there's lots of weird names in here, so just do your best. Okay. Read this whole chapter for me, please.
16.
Uh-huh.
Now Sarah, Abram's wife, had borne him no children. She had a female Egyptian servant whose name was Hagar. And Sarai said to Abram, "Behold now, the Lord has prevented me from bearing children. Go into my servant. It may be that I shall obtain children by her." And Abram listened to the voice of Sarai. So after Abram had lived 10 years in the land of Canaan, Sarai, Abram's wife, took Hagar the Egyptian, her servant, and gave her to Abram, her husband, as a wife. And he went into Hagar, and she conceived. And when she saw that she had conceived, she looked with contempt on her mistress. And Sarai said to Abram, "May the wrong done to me be on you. I gave my servant to your embrace. And when she saw that she had conceived, she looked on me with contempt. May the Lord judge between you and me." But Abram said to Sarai, "Behold, your servant is in your power. Do to her as you please." Then Sarai dealt harshly with her, and she fled from her. The angel of the Lord found her by a spring of water in the wilderness, the spring on the way to Shur. And he said, "Hagar, servant of Sarai, why have you come from? Where have you come from, and where are you going?" She said, "I am fleeing from my mistress, Sarah." The angel of the Lord said to her, "Return to your mistress and submit to her." The angel of the Lord also said to her, "I will surely multiply your offspring so that they cannot be numbered for multitude." And the angel of the Lord said to her, "Behold, you are pregnant and shall bear a son. You shall call his name Ishmael, because the Lord has listened to your affliction. He shall be a wild donkey of a man, his hand against everyone and everyone's hand against him. And he shall dwell over against all his kinsmen." So she called the name of the Lord who spoke to her, "You are a God of seeing." For she said, "Truly, here I have seen him who looks after me." Therefore, the well was called Beer Laharoi. It lies between Kadesh and Bered. And Hagar bore Abram a son, and Abram called the name of his son, whom Hagar bore, Ishmael. Abram was 86 years old when Hagar bore Ishmael to Abram.
Great story. We could talk for a long, 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 long time about Abraham, Sarai, Hagar, and the love triangle here. That's going to have to wait for another time. Okay. But I want to focus on the angel of Yahweh. What's interesting here is this is the first time in the Bible you find the phrase angel of Yahweh. Okay, look at verse 7. Look at verse 7. The angel of Yahweh found her in a spring of water in the wilderness. Now, go back to tool 1B, not a tool. Eric, the name Yahweh, is this Father, Son, or Spirit? Does the name itself tell us?
No.
No, we don't know. Okay. So whenever you're reading the Old Testament and it says, like in verse 5, may Yahweh judge between you and me, that does not clue us in immediately to whether or not that's Father, Son, or Spirit. So that's not how we're going to approach this text. It's not going to work. But let's get the context of what's going on here. Daniel, here in Genesis 16, situate Hagar. I know you know the story really well. What's happened to Hagar? Where is she? Just give me the context here.
Excuse me. This is where Abraham has basically lost trust in God. He just had a covenant meeting in chapter 15, but now he goes out on his own with trying to have a son that doesn't know that's going to come from him. So his wife Sarah offers Hagar to him, her handmaid, and he goes into her and conceives with her, and then somehow thinks that this is the promise going to come through him. But
yes, pretty good. Yeah, very good. So, I mean, this is, again, a very famous story between Abraham and Hagar. A couple of things that I want to note. Look at verse 5. Verse 5. Eric, read that again for me, please.
And Sarah said to Abram, may the wrong done to me be on you. I gave my servant to your embrace, and when she saw that she had conceived, she looked on me with contempt. May the Lord judge between you and me.
Okay, so I want you to notice here the emphasis on seeing. There's an emphasis on seeing here in this text. And it's going to have an importance here in a second, but let's keep going. So Hagar flees. Sarai dealt harshly with her. I don't think that Sarah's actions here are justifiable at all. I think they are horrible. Absolutely no justification for what Sarai does to her. But then verse 7, the angel of Yahweh found her by a spring of water in the wilderness, the spring on the way to Shur. And he said, Hagar, servant of Sarai, where have you come from and where are you going? She said, I am fleeing from my mistress, Sarai. Now, listen carefully to the text. Hagar, servant of Sarai, where have you come and where are you going? What question does that remind y'all of in Genesis?
Where are you?
Genesis 3. This should be recalling our minds to Genesis 3. Where are you? So the angel says, where are you? Where have you come from? Where are you going? What's interesting here, though, is you'll notice the questions are a bit different. Genesis 3, it's where are you? This is, where have you come from and where are you going? There's nuance here in this question, which I think is fascinating. She said, I am fleeing from my mistress Sarai. The angel of Yahweh said to her, return to your mistress and submit to her. Sometime we'll talk about how just unseemly those words seem until you notice what's going on there. But let's keep going. Verse 10. The angel of Yahweh said to her, I will surely multiply your offspring so that they cannot be numbered for multitude. Listen carefully. What does that remind you of in Genesis? I will surely multiply your offspring so that they cannot be multiplied or numbered for multitude.
Promise to Abraham.
Genesis 12, right? So a few different things going on here. The angel of Yahweh said to her, behold, you are pregnant and shall bear a son. You shall call his name Ishmael, because Yahweh listened to your affliction. He shall be a wild donkey of a man, his hand against everyone and everyone's hand against him, and he shall dwell over against his kinsmen. Now, before we go on, Because verse 13 is really the crux of this for our discussion today. My question four here asks, considering Genesis 16, is the angel of Yahweh within or outside the divine identity? And by divine identity, I mean one who is God, outside the divine identity, one who is not God. To this point, now don't use verse 13 yet, but to this point, if y'all were reading this text, would you think that this is someone within the divine identity or without? Brenda, what about you?
I'd say outside.
Why?
Just the context of that angel of the Lord, it sounds like he's working for the Lord, but it doesn't sound like he is part of the Godhead.
Right. I agree. Other thoughts about that, y'all?
That's where I would be.
I'm with Brenda here, too.
It just sounds like a messenger.
Yeah. Okay. Now, let's go ahead and deal with this word. Because I want to try to get the full range of what this word means. I'm going to back up to question three. What does this term mean in both the Old Testament and the New Testament? Here in Genesis 16, it's clearly just meaning messenger. Now, I'm going to push us with this term in a little bit, because I think that is a starting point for this term. It's not the full semantic range. There's a few other things that go on with this word. But whenever you look at this word, as it's used in both Greek and Hebrew, the word angel typically means messenger. Okay, messenger. And here in Genesis 16, you'll notice the messages are certainly from God. Where have you come from? Where are you going? I will multiply you. These are things that God has previously spoken. So it sounds as though this is one who is just taking the message of God and delivering it over to Hagar. But then you get to verse 13. So she called the name of Yahweh who spoke to her, "You are a God of seeing. For she said, truly, here I have seen him who looks after me." Brenda.
Now this sounds like.
Now, verse 13 pretty much just explicitly tells us. Is the angel of Yahweh within or outside the divine identity?
Within.
Clearly, whenever you look at verse 13, this is one who is within the divine identity. Okay, I want us to think through this a little bit. A couple of things I want to note again. Abram had listened to the voice of his wife Sarai, much like Genesis 3. This is repeating the sin of Genesis 3. And in this case, it's not just going to be eating of a fruit, but it's going to be the sexual exploitation of another. Terrific what happens. Then Abraham had been caught and seen. The angel of Yahweh had seen her, spoken to her. God had heard her. And now she says, so she called the name of Yahweh who spoke to her, "You are a God of seeing," or "a God who sees me." Now the ESV does not put this in here, which I don't know why. what name does she give to God? Other translations here?
El Roy.
Yeah, is it in the CJB, Randy?
I'm trying to look at it. It's part of that name that they called the place.
Yeah,
the well.
Beer Halaroy. Yes. Yeah. It's a part of the name of the well. The well is the more extended name of it. The basic name that she gives to God is El Roy. Okay, Elroy. You'll recognize this as like Elohim. Okay.
El Shaddai. Trying to think, there's a couple others that y'all would be familiar with. And this is just the Hebrew word for see. Okay, so this is the God who sees. The God who sees. Okay, so whenever Hagar names God, this is the God who sees. Now, I cannot for the life of me remember who pointed this out to me. So if anybody knows the source or if somebody told me, please tell me.
That was in the book.
Was it Carolyn? You know where I'm going? Was this mm-hmm. Carolyn James? Okay. What? Tell me, Brenda, where I'm going then. You know where I'm going. Read my mind.
Oh. I'm not sure.
What's unique about this?
She likes it. She's the only one that's giving God a name.
I never thought. You're right. It was in the book. Yeah.
This is the only place that God is referred to as this, the God who sees it.
And even take it a step further, this is the most interesting part. This, and I've not found an exception to this. This is the only time in the Bible where a human gives God a name. You think through this, God revealed himself to Moses as Yahweh. He revealed himself as Elohim. The Holy Spirit said that Jesus would be named Jesus. This is the only time a human gives God a name, the God who sees me. Yeah, Bruce, give me just 1 second to get through this, all right? Because I'll make one connection. It's interesting here that this is all about seeing. Now, I want to connect this to another concept. We last class, or was this two classes ago, we talked about the word of Yahweh, okay? The word of Yahweh. And do y'all remember what one of the unique aspects of the word of Yahweh is in the Old Testament?
Seen.
Appears, yes. The word of God, the word of Yahweh, appears. And what's interesting about this is, as you go throughout the Old Testament, this phrase here, angel of Yahweh, I want to see, this is the phrase here. The phrase, angel of Yahweh, really acts like the word of the Lord. Now, this is where I want to put these two together. The word of Yahweh here is what we would say is the message. The angel is the messenger. Put those two together. It is like the word and the angel are giving forth the full focus of God's address. Have to hold those two together. Bruce, go ahead.
Yeah, and that goes along with all the passages that I'm not sure if it's every single instance, but it says the angel of the Lord appeared.
Yes.
So yep. That's pretty cool. The other thing I was going to say before you made this point was very interesting that God, before she named him, God gave her a name for her son, which is Ishmael.
Which means?
God hears.
Yes.
So he gave her the message that God hears. But she took upon herself in her loneliness and desperation in the wilderness to come to the conclusion that God sees.
Isn't this neat? This is full communication here. God sees and God hears. It's like God is both speaking and God is hearing. It's the full communion that God has with his people. You see revealed in yourself. Absolutely excellent observation. Okay, I want to simmer on this just for a minute to make sure this makes sense, because this is important. Brenda, you're thinking through something.
I'm thinking. Is this a way for God to actually appear in a way that they could handle and tolerate his magnificence?
Yes.
So anytime we see angel of the Lord, is that always the case? Or is it?
Runaway story, I think so.
Okay.
Whenever you see this phrase right here, angel of Yahweh or angel of the Lord, to my knowledge, now I may have missed one and I will certainly recognize that, okay? But to my knowledge, every time this appears in the Old Testament, this is within the divine identity.
appearing in a form that they can handle.
Yeah, now we've not gotten to this father, son, or spirit. That's a move we're going to make in a second. But I think that's the idea here, that much as in Genesis 12 and in Genesis 15, the word of Yahweh had appeared giving a message, now here the angel of Yahweh is appearing to Hagar, doing something very similar, but also a bit different. Yes.
Is the angel of the Lord, it doesn't necessarily say here, we can read into it, but it's heard more than seen.
Yes.
Does that seem to be the case often when the angel of the Lord comes to someone?
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. And it's interesting though with that note.
More the word of the Yahweh more appears.
Yes.
And the angel of Yahweh more is seen, is heard, not seen.
Yes.
We'd almost think that should be opposite.
Right. It's both, right? And it's a focus.
Yeah.
Which one's the focus? It's both. Because with the word of the Lord, the word of the Lord brings a verbal address, but he's seen as well. And the same here with the angel of Yahweh. The angel of Yahweh brings words, but is still seen. But there is a somewhat different focus. And that's, I don't want to go there quite yet, but this is where I want to say. Why does the text sometimes tell us the angel appears, sometimes it's the word of the Lord? That's a question I want us to simmer on. Probably going to get to that next class. But you're taking us there, which is good. Brenda?
Is it a physical manifestation then?
I think so.
It is something that is seen as well as heard.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Now, is this material? Well, but it by physical, can be seen and interacted with? Absolutely. Penny? Or anything else? Sorry.
No.
I have a question.
I thought your hand was up, Penny. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I haven't tested this yet, so I'll just throw the question out there. So anytime it says angel of the Lord, I'm wondering if it's the same identity or if it can be inside or outside of deity as far as Godhead. Because I thought of two occasions. The angel of the Lord killed all the firstborn.
Yes.
The angel of the Lord killed 185,000 people in one night.
Yes.
I'm not sure. So maybe next class or whenever you feel is the time to place that in, we'll talk about, because it sounds to me it's a case by case basis. Is that right?
Well, this is where we have to be careful with our wording here, Bruce. Yes. Whenever you see the phrase angel of Yahweh, mm-hmm. it does seem to me that is always talking about one who is within the divine identity.
Okay.
Now, are there angels, just general angels that are sent in the Old Testament that are not within the divine identity? Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yes. But that phrase is seeming to evoke a aspect that this is one who is within Yahweh. And I'm going to show y'all a couple other things here that really lead me to that conclusion. Yeah. So, Pam, you're getting ahead of yourself. Randy Kingry already told us we're talking about Revelation 4 and 5 and scenes of vision before we get to Genesis 1. So I ain't touching Genesis 1 quite yet, but I am really excited to share that with y'all. Y'all have no idea how much self-control that's taking not to just blurt that out and tell y'all where we're going. We're going to stay focused. Are there other thoughts about this? I want to get this one before we move on to the rest. Okay, let's look at Genesis 22. The next key text where you find the angel of Yahweh is in Genesis 22. Genesis 22. Jane, will you read for me? Mm-hmm. 9 through 14, please.
9 through 14. Uh-huh. And it came to the place which God had told them of. And Abraham built the altar there and laid wood in order and bound Isaac his son and laid him on the altar upon the wood. And Abraham stretched forth his hand and took the knife to slay his son. And the angel of Jehovah called unto him out of heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham. And he said, Here am I.
And he said, lay down, lay not thy hand upon the lad, neither do thou anything unto him. For now I know that thou fearest God, seeing thou hast not withheld thy son, thy only son, from me. And Abraham lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, behind him a ram caught in the thicket by its horns. And Abraham went and took the ram and offered him up for, as a burnt offering in the stead of his son. And Abraham called the name of that place Jehovah Jireh, as it is said to this day, in the mount of Jehovah it shall be provided.
Yes, yes. Now, I'm going to go ahead and tell y'all, I think this is firmly within the divine identity. Prove my point.
Called out of heaven.
Yes. Yes. Okay. This is one who calls from heaven. Okay. Other things. There's a few aspects of this, I think, that leads to this conclusion.
Verse 14, he names the place Jehovah will provide. So it's after God.
Yes. Yes. Very good. That's the second part, I think, that leads to that. And there's one other. There's one other that I would say.
Now I know that you fear God.
Okay. Almost there, Bruce. Almost there.
For you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me personally.
Hey. Oh, there you go. I say that a lot, don't I?
You say boom a lot, yeah.
Were you the one that pointed that out to me last week, or was it Cindy? Was it you making fun of me? Probably so. Yeah. These goes to my face. So if you look at verse 12, I want y'all to note the pronouns here. The angel said, okay, the angel of Yahweh, verse 11, do not lay your hand on the boy or do anything to him. For now I know that you fear Elohim, seeing you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me.
Yeah. Now I know, and me, two pronouns.
Gracious, I'm forgetting my sources today again. I cannot remember. I think this may have been Richard Middleton, and somebody else told me this. Please forgive me. Matt sent me this podcast a couple weeks ago. You invent Genesis 3 as the place where humanity comes to the knowledge of good and evil. Genesis 22 is where God comes to the knowledge of Abraham. So you see, again, a retelling of knowledge here and God knowing, much like Genesis 3. But here, the knowledge of God is seeing you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me. Okay. So again, it's clearly one who is within the divine identity. Thoughts about this one before we move on? I don't want to rush us through these. Okay. Do y'all see how much more meaningful it is to read the Genesis 22? Anybody know the key name for this chapter? The binding? Anybody remember? The Akedah. Okay, this is the Akedah. In Genesis 22, whenever you read the Akedah, as Christ, that's the one. Jesus the Christ is the one who is speaking to Abraham in this. It makes it so much more meaningful because this is, I think, the central narrative for understanding the crucifixion of Christ in the New Testament. But Jesus himself is the one speaking. I already gave away the answer. So I already know who I think the angel of the Lord is. Look at Genesis 32. Look at Genesis 32. Genesis 32. Kirby, read verse 3 for me, please.
Then Jacob sent messengers before him to his brother Esau in the land of Seir, the country of Edom.
Where do we see angels in this case?
Messengers.
Messengers. Is that one who is within or outside the divine identity?
Outside.
Outside. Okay. So I just wanted to use this as a quick illustration, y'all. This goes back to what Bruce, I think, was getting at earlier. Jacob sent, this could easily be translated angels. It's the exact same word that's used for angel of Yahweh. Jacob sent angels before him. This is just clearly human messengers.
Yeah.
Would anybody read this as a divine identity?
No, of course human, not. Humans don't tell angelic beings what to do.
Right. Yeah. There's a great deal about it that would be problematic. Brenda, what were you going to say?
That's what I was going to say. A human doesn't have an angel as a man.
Right. I mean, yeah, I mean, it's just ridiculous. This clearly is talking about human messengers. So this was, somebody texted me yesterday. I said, well, there's two trick questions on here because I didn't want us to run ahead of ourselves and think, oh, cool. Every time we see the word angel, that's Jesus. You have to be very disciplined with this. You can't just assume, oh, angel, therefore Jesus. So that was a trick question. Look at Exodus 3.
Before you get there, go any further, I'm vacillating a little bit on this too. Is it possible that an angel of the Lord is not Jesus? I want to throw that out there. I know that we're exploring this now.
Yeah.
Just because he uses the personal pronouns of God does not necessarily mean that he is God. And One of the things I was going to use to back that up is Exodus 7:1, where God told Moses, you'll be like a God to Pharaoh and Aaron will speak for you. So we're using personal pronouns in the place of God and in the place of Moses, but that doesn't necessarily mean that I'm deity when I do that.
That's a very, very well reasoned, Bruce. Yeah. Let's sit on that question and let's let it fester for a little bit, because I think that's an excellent question we need to be thinking through.
I don't mean to muddy the water. I just wanted to.
That's an excellent question. We don't need to jump through this and willy nilly say, "Oh, this is all Jesus." We're talking here about our Savior. We need to be respectful and recognize. Whenever we are reading narratives that include him or ones that aren't, we need to be respectful of that. Now, I'm going to show you a couple other things as we go on that I think do give credence to reading this as an angel of Yahweh. But I do want Bruce's question to linger with us for a while, y'all, and just really ask, why should we see this as the Son of God? Okay.
I do think that's why the definition of angel has always been drilled into my head as a message here, because it is someone outside of divinity communicating the message that God has given them. This is the message I want you to present. It's coming from me, but it's coming through somebody outside of my divinity, you know?
Yes.
But I think that's why that term has been the one that's been drilled in my head so much. Just from our tradition.
Well, yes, and this is where I want to come back to what you and Bruce are both saying here a little bit and ask. This is coming from somebody. Who's this coming from? Why is it being sent through somebody else, and who's it going to? Hopefully we're going to get Trinitarian with that. But I do think there is some nuances to this that we do need to think through.
Yeah, Ryan, and again, getting into even what Eric is saying, you know, there is a messenger who delivers a message. There is also a messenger who comes with authority to not only deliver the message, but make decisions.
Say it one more time for me, Bruce. I didn't catch that.
There's a messenger who just simply delivers a message. Then there is another messenger who comes and speaks with authority because they've been given power or authority with that message.
Right.
I mean, that's two different people. I mean, I can deliver you a message, or I can come deliver a message and make some decisions. Let me give you a good example in the New Testament. Jesus gave authority to the apostles to not only deliver the message, but also speak for God himself. Because the Spirit was with them to do that, to guide them. So they were more than messengers. They were messengers with authority. So when we're talking about the angel of the Lord, truly, whoever this is, they're not just delivering a message. They're coming with authority.
Yes. Well said. And to that point, as you go through the book of Revelation, you see angels time and time again that are clearly not Father, Son, or Spirit.
Correct.
Now, And again, this is where there's much about angels that we still have to discuss. And Jerry, to your question, I will answer that. Maybe not today, but I will answer that. Okay. It's a really good question, but I hopefully we'll have time today, but if not, I will answer it next class. Okay. All right. Let me show you all two others in Exodus that I think are very helpful to this discussion. Look at Exodus 3. Exodus 3. Jerry, will you read these for me, please? Exodus 3, the first six verses.
3, 1 through 6.
Yes, ma'am.
Now Moses was keeping the flock of his father-in-law, Jethro, the priest of Midian. And he led his flock to the west side of the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. And the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame of fire out of the midst of a bush. And he looked, and behold, the bush was burning, yet it was not consumed. And Moses said, I will turn aside to see this great sight, why the bush is not burned. And when the Lord saw that, he turned aside to see. And when the Lord, oh, I didn't read that right. And when the Lord saw that he turned aside to see, God called to him out of the bush, Moses, Moses. And he said, here I am. And then he said, do not come near. Take your sandals off your feet, for the place on which you are standing is holy ground. And he said,
I'm sorry, just finish up.
Okay. And he said, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob. And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look at God.
Okay. So I want to start with Bruce's question. And Bruce, I really do appreciate you making us think through this critically and not just accept this. Let me ask Bruce's question this way. Here is the angel merely transferring a divine address to Moses, or is this one who is also authoritatively within the message? Is that a fair way to ask the question, Bruce?
I think it's a great way. Is it not just someone transmitting a message, or is it the source of the message?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Now, let's work through this carefully then. Verse 2. The angel of Yahweh appeared to him. Now, Randy, already, what should we be noticing?
He can be seen.
He can be seen. Okay.
Well, something about him can be seen.
Yes. Okay. He appears like fire, but he still appears. Moses looked, and behold, the bush was burning, yet it was not consumed. Moses said, I will turn aside to see this great sight, why the bush is not burned. When Yahweh saw that he turned aside to see, God called to him out of the bush, Moses, Moses. Now let's be very slow with our reading. Verse 2. The angel of Yahweh appeared to him in a flame of fire. Verse 4. When Yahweh saw that he turned aside to see, God called to him out of the bush. So, talk through this with me. All right, so verse 2, who's talking?
Angel of the Lord.
Okay, so in Exodus chapter 3, verse 2, you have the angel of the Lord speaking, okay?
Appearing only first.
Appearing, yes, appearing. Well,
not speaking yet.
Yeah, no, you're right. Yeah, he appears. Now look to verse 4. Read verse 4 for me again, Heath.
So when the Lord saw that he turned aside to look, God called to him from the midst of the bush and said, Moses, Moses. And he said, here I am.
Who now is in the narrative?
The Lord and God.
Here you have the Lord, which of course is Yahweh. And then we have God, which is Elohim. The Lord God appears to him. So, Bruce, to you, how do we, seriously, let's talk through this. Who's talking from the bush?
All right, let me back up. So verse 2, the only thing we know at this point is the angel of the Lord has made an appearance. And the appearance is a manifestation of a bush that is burning but not consumed. When Moses gets close, and it says in the scripture, God saw, the Lord, Yahweh, saw that Moses turned aside to look. Then it says Elohim called him out of the bush. So therefore, the person speaking is of divine identity. It is God himself speaking.
Yeah. So, and so this is one where it's more evident, right?
Yeah, it's a lot easier in this passage.
Yes. Yeah, this is one where it's a lot easier. Now, Bruce has brought up some other passages that I have not put on here today because I did not give us the difficult ones. we'll deal with those next week or 2 weeks, whatever it is. But this is one where I think it's a bit easier to see. That the angel of the Lord is within the divine identity. A couple other aspects that we have to note here. Verse 5. Do not come near. Take off your sandals on your feet, for the place in which you are standing is holy ground. And one of the basic truths about angels that we have to accept is that angels do not accept worship. I have this passage on the front of the page, verse 10 of Revelation 19. I fell down at his feet to worship him. But he said, you must not do that. I am a fellow servant with you and your brothers who hold to the testimony of Jesus. Worship God. So that's a maxim about angels that we have to hold on to. Angels never, ever accept worship. I put this on question under point 2 on page 1. According to Revelation 19, 9 and 10, worship marks one within the divine identity. The big word for this is monolatry, worship of the one God. Only God accepts worship. And Eric here, does the angel accept worship?
Not Revelation.
No. Not Revelation. What about in Exodus?
Accept worship?
I can say it a different way.
Yeah, go ahead.
No angel has ever told anyone to take their shoes off.
Well said. Yeah.
Or consider themselves to be in a holy place. Maybe.
Perhaps. Yeah. Yeah. When
revealing a message to someone, they wouldn't say, I'm a holy person in a holy place.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Well said. It's not the presence of the angel itself. Right, it's God's presence.
They're not counting their qualities. God has something to be.
There you go.
Taking advantage of.
There you go. Well said. Well said. Yeah. The last thing I want to point out, y'all, is verse 6. The angel then says, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob. And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look at God. So then in verse 6, I think, makes it even clearer that this angel who is speaking from the bush is within the divine identity.
2 points out of 6, what he said and what Moses did. That's both of those point to divine identity.
Yeah, well said. Well said. Okay, so before we go on, questions, thoughts about Exodus 3.
Would you say these people are having encounters with the Son?
Yes. Yes. I do. Yeah. And that's I think, where the text is wanting to lead us,
right,
is to see this is humanity
engaging with the Son of God. Yeah. Yeah. Now, I've still not shown you all that. Jerry's question still stands. Why don't we claim this as the Father? Why not even claim this as the Spirit? Why claim this as the Son?
And I'd also like to bring up that Exodus 3 makes that very clear. And we can see the connection in the New Testament with Jesus himself, that Moses had a conversation with Jesus at the bush. I'm still trying to wrap my mind around Hagar. So I'm not saying that I deny what's being put out here. I'm saying I love that we can all discuss this, because I want to come to a better knowledge of what's going on with this.
Yeah, absolutely. No, seriously, these are weighty topics. There's much about this. I have still procrastinated my sermon series about angels because this is where I start to get on shaky ground.
Just misspell angels and you'll be fine.
Yeah, right. Yeah, angels. I do love angels. I love trigonometry. Yeah, I could easily do a whole sermon on trigonometry.
But there is something different about, quote, the angel of the Lord. I'm glad you brought that up in this study, because many different angels are mentioned. Most of them don't have a name. A couple of them do. Some of them are called archangels. But this, the angel of the Lord, clearly is in a different category, and I'm not sure why yet.
Well, Bruce, you just read my mind, because you know what we're about to talk about?
What?
What is the name of the angel of the Lord?
Right.
So let me ask this question. What angels do we know names of in the Bible?
Gabriel.
Michael. About it.
I think that's it.
Yeah. Bob. Yeah.
I was gonna say Zerona.
That's about it. Look over to Exodus 23. I'm skipping a few verses we're gonna come back to.
Wow, Elroy, I might have been the name of the Lord.
There you go. Yeah. Elroy.
Never named again.
Uh-huh. I'm thinking out loud here. Yeah, I'm curious, Randy. To my knowledge, I'm going to guess there is an allusion somewhere. I don't know where it would be, though. I'd have to think through that.
In this last one we looked at,
so
the angel appeared, then it was seen. The angel appeared, then it saw Moses, had turned to him, and then he spoke.
Yes.
And before with Haggai.
Hagar.
Hagar. I did say that.
Yeah.
Hagar, the angel was, the angel of the Lord was heard.
Yes.
And then she realized
there's a reversal order here. There's a reverse order.
He saw.
Yeah.
And even in I'm glad you brought up the seeing, because I've noticed it's in all of them, that you know, a seeing that you have not withheld your only son was one from Genesis 22.
And seeing that he turned toward the bush.
God has seen something in every one of these.
Interesting here.
Oh yeah.
But I would want to notice that you bring up the very first.
I had noticed
story with Hagar.
Seriously. You're right, Genesis 16, Genesis 22, and Exodus 3. Well, I'll be.
Yes. When God saw that Moses turned aside.
Right. Yeah, that's fascinating. Yeah, I'm up to simmer on that for a long time. That's great.
So maybe the angel of the Lord's name is Elroy.
Yeah. Elroy. It sounds like a Butler County name. Look at Exodus 23. He has another name.
You can't get above your raisin.
Look at Exodus 23. All right, verse 20. Behold, God says, I've sent an angel before you to guard you on the way and to bring you to the place that I have prepared. pay careful attention to him and obey his voice. Do not rebel against him, for he will not pardon your transgression, for my name is in him.
It's good. It's good.
I have to be.
Let's talk about the name first. What's this name? What name did God reveal himself as to Moses in Exodus 3?
I am.
Say what?
I am.
I am. Yahweh. I think the name being mentioned here is Yahweh. And this was the second command. You even begin Exodus 20, verse 1. God spoke all these words saying, I am Yahweh your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. Verse 7, you shall not take the name of Yahweh in vain. For Yahweh will not withhold, will not withhold. You shall not take the name of Yahweh your God in vain, for Yahweh will not hold him guiltless who takes his name in vain. It seems that that name is Yahweh. What name has God then given to this angel?
His own name.
Which is?
Yahweh. The God of covenant.
Yeah, I the only way I can read Exodus 23:21 sensibly is to say that God has given his covenant name to this angel.
Can I go just a slight different direction on that?
Sure.
Again, there's the person who delivers a message, and then there's the person who delivers a message and has the authority as well, like an apostle.
Yeah.
I'd read this totally different. When I read 21, pay careful attention to him and obey his voice. Do not rebel against him, for he will not pardon your transgression, for my authority is in him. So I didn't name him Yahweh. I'm giving him authority. And you need to be very careful to obey him. Because if you do, I'll curse your enemies. I'll bless you. I'll be your God. He's my representative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I would totally agree with that. I would totally agree with that, Bruce. And I think that what I'm saying is the service level meaning you're giving the implication. The implication is this individual has the authority of God. Daniel, go ahead. I can tell there's something you want to share.
Question.
Let me get Daniel first. I'll get right to you, Jerry.
Okay. So when Jude says that Jesus led them out of Egypt, then is this God the Father speaking of his son Jesus, since Jesus the Son to be that angel who will lead them through the wilderness?
Great question. Great question. Y'all will notice I've not dealt with any New Testament passages today. We're going to deal with some next class. Jude 7 would be one that I would look at to talk about this. Jerry, go ahead.
Okay. Excuse me. Still looking at verse 21. Well, 20, I will send an angel. Okay. 21, pay careful attention to him and obey his voice. Do not rebel against him, for he will not pardon your transgression. It appears to me to make sense that God speaks, God the Father, and is referring to God, to Jesus, that Jesus is the one who's going to bring the message and is not to be rebelled against because he is also God.
And that's my reading of this. Yes. Yeah. That's my reading. And I think that's certainly how I'm currently inclined to read this passage. But again, Bruce is asking some great questions today, y'all. And I really appreciate how Bruce is asking these questions because this is a very good conversation to have. How is the Son, how is and is not the sun manifest before AD zero? yes. Yes. Mark, was that Mark? Or is it Bruce?
It was me. It was me at this point. I was just going to say, I just wasn't really sure when he says my name is in him, if he meant the name Yahweh is in him or if God's authority is in him. Either way, that would fit Jesus. I'm also wondering if maybe this couldn't be the Holy Spirit.
Yeah. So I'll tell y'all why I'm inclined very briefly, why I'm inclined for this not to be the Spirit. I think the Spirit is the cloud and the fire that goes before them. Mm-hmm. Now, I will reason us through that and show y'all my evidence for that, why I'd reach that sometime, not today. But I think as you go through the Exodus accounts, the Spirit is the cloud and the fire. Jesus seems to be the angel. So, great, again, great thoughts and possibilities. I'm just telling y'all that's where I'm working from with this. Let me show you just one more thing, and then
Ryan, can I ask a question?
Yeah, of course.
Why is that phrase in verse 21, for he will not pardon your transgression?
This is a warning to the generation, it should have been the generation of Moses, that if they rebel against the angel, they're not going to be forgiven. This is what you see happen in the wilderness, is whenever Israel rebels against the voice of the Lord, they're not forgiven for that. God will be merciful and extend it to the next generation, but they're not forgiven for rebelling against him. I don't know if you're asking something deeper here, Diane, but my simple answer would be, this is just a severe warning to them. Listen to the angel and do as he says, because this is pretty serious what's about to happen. Were you asking something deeper?
I was kind of asking something different than that. If the angel is God or has deity within him, can he not forgive transgressions?
Well, yeah. So I don't think the question in this verse is, could he? I think it's, will he?
Because of rebellion?
Right.
And that it wouldn't be immediate.
Well, and it's not even that generation.
He's going to hold yes, some accountability to them.
Yes.
For this transgression, not immediately. Okay, it's fine. You know, but let's go about our covenant.
Yes.
You know, you're breaking a covenant.
Absolutely.
And per generation, that was kind of held against them. Okay, now it's relented. So.
Yep.
Yeah. So I have a follow-up question.
Go ahead.
Did you say that discussing the angel of the Lord could take two classes or three?
Four. Yeah, we're going to get to creation by October, so that's all right.
No, I appreciate the discussion. Yes. It really helps me to talk these things out, to think out loud, so to speak, with the group. So thank you for letting us do that and guiding us this way.
Absolutely. And seriously, this is why I love discussions like this, y'all, because it helps me to see that the Bible is not this neat little package I can put into eight little questions and great, go home and we have it all figured out. This is a complicated subject. We're talking about the eternal God here. So, I mean, we need to have this type of dialogue about this. All right, let me show you one last thing and then we'll leave class confused. Look at Exodus 14. Look at Exodus 14.
Hey, Ryan, before you go on, Mark has his hand up.
I'm sorry, Mark.
Who's that from? Who said that? Kirby? Well, sorry. I just was wondering if Diane was meaning to ask, since the angel is talking about forgiving or not forgiving, does that show evidence that the angel is deity? I think I might be wrong about that.
Got it. See, I needed an Aaron here, Moses.
Thank
God,
you,
Diane. Was that the question?
Yeah, that sounds better.
Yes, there you go. Yes, 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 and yes. Very briefly, yes. You do not see angels atoning for sin. You do not see angels pardoning people of sin. It is God who does that. God and God alone.
That even coincides with the apostles when you say that, because an angel cannot forgive sin. Paul could not forgive sin. Peter could not forgive sin. But yet the Spirit told them, whatever you bind on earth shall have been bound in heaven. So they could provide what God was sharing with humanity. They just couldn't act as deity.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say, just so we can add a little love of confusion, the sins that you forgive shall be forgiven in heaven.
No, we're not going to do that.
Yeah. But again, it's a similar agency, but even there it rests with God. Okay. Let me show you one more thing. And then we can spend 2 weeks thinking about this. The question that Jerry asked forever ago that I think needs to be answered is, who is the source of this message? And who is the recipient of this? Well, in most cases, you have a human recipient carried by the angel of the hospitable of the Lord. So who is the one, if this is Jesus, which I still think we need to look at the New Testament to be sure of this. If this is Jesus, who would the source then be? Who?
The Father?
I think it's the Father.
It'd have to be the Father if it's Jesus speaking.
It seems that this is another example of prosopological exegesis, divine intra-talk, okay? God's self-talk. I think what the angel of Yahweh is helping us to see is that even within these examples, there is a self-deliberation within God that the angel is caring about. So just want to put this out here and let this simmer a little bit. And you'll notice then, even with the Ten Commandments, if God is promising that the angel will go forth, who would then have been the one speaking to Moses? Father, Son, or Spirit?
Father.
Yeah. I think it's the Father through the Son. And the Spirit's there. We'll talk about the Spirit sometime. I do think we see the Spirit at Sinai without question. But Moses is one of the very few humans to have ever lived to have been able to talk with the Father. There's multiple examples of people communing and talking to the Son, and even a couple of the Spirit. Direct communication to the Father, seeing God as face to face, it's very, very rare. So this is, I think, a part of the answer to why there's a self-talk of this, okay? So let's close this out by looking at Exodus 14. Exodus 14, verse 19. The angel of God, here's a different term. This is the angel of God, not the angel of Yahweh, but the angel of God, who was going before the host of Israel, moved and went behind them, and the pillar of cloud moved from before them and stood behind them, coming between the host of Egypt and the host of Israel. And there was the cloud of darkness, and it lit up the night without one coming near all the night. Now, I'm just going to put this out here to simmer for 2 weeks, and then we'll come back to it, okay? I think that this is one of the most triune passages in the whole Old Testament. Why? We'll talk about that next time. Y'all, thank you so much for a great discussion today. What we'll do next time, I will chart some of this out as kind of a base point. And I'll try to get together with Bruce and summarize some of the questions he's asked and just get us to think about this more critically next time. And we'll work through some of the other passages about the angel of Yahweh in the Old Testament. Go from there. All right, what do y'all have before we close out?